Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. Attitude, bitch.
Still got an echo over there, Andrew?
I don't hear one at the moment, so I think we're good to go.
I don't hear
All
one
right,
at the moment,
go,
so
then.
I think we're good to go.
Never mind, I just heard myself back in like a 2 second delay.
Okay, so obviously we're having a little bit of technical difficulties to start the show tonight. We're going to go ahead and see what we can do to take care of those. When we come back, we will start the Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Everybody, we believe we have this all figured out. Good evening or afternoon if you happen to be listening the next day. It is currently 11:35 p.m. on the East Coast, February 11th, 2019. This is your Raw Reaction on the Chair Shot Radio Network. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
What up, bitches?
And the third man, Andrew Balazs.
Yep, that's accurate.
Really, cool. None of these new signees to the Performance Center do anything for you, Andrew?
No, it's the Performance Center. Why the fuck do I care?
Because this is the next group of people that will eventually be on NXT.
Oh, the next group of, like, two people that'll matter, and then one person matters if they get called up or they get buried, because we know how the cycle goes. Who cares?
You're being very elitist, Andrew.
No, I'm being pragmatic and realistic because that's how everything has been going with WWE. They get a crop of talent and they do crap with the crop and then they just shove it to us like, oh, look, you like these people from the indies, so here, you're supposed to care. Yeah, no, make me care. Fuck you, I don't care who they sign.
Tony, do you have any feelings one way or another about the group of people that was just signed?
Nah. I don't like to count my eggs before they hatch, and these are most definitely eggs.
I don't care what our overlord says. I'm excited for 3.0. I'm a huge fan of them. I have been for years. I hope they do very well in the WWE. They won't, but I hope they do anyway. Their style does not fit the WWE style, but I'm still looking forward to seeing them trying. The person in this group that I have the most hope for, though, is ACH. I genuinely feel like
I just
want to
know where 1.0 and 2.0 are.
All right, Dean Ambrose, knock it the fuck off. We just started. Andrew's got nothing. And again, we just started. All right, so this Sunday we'll be
I don't
want to
have anything. Sheesh.
this, This Sunday will be the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. We will be doing our predictions a little bit later on. But first, there is an episode of Raw to get to before we discuss the pay-per-view, so let's go ahead and do that. Stephanie McMahon and Triple H get things started on the evening. They come out to talk about what has gone on with Becky Lynch over the course of the last week, both on Raw with Stephanie and SmackDown with Triple H. Stephanie goes to call Becky to the ring. Becky makes her own way out. They have a bit of a tete-a-tete. I believe I'm using that correctly, Tony.
Well, there's three of them. Yeah, there's three. Tete actually means head to head. It's French. You can't have head to head with three people.
It's a triple tete.
Yeah, well, you can take your menage a trois elsewhere, Tony.
Tony's all about
Cardi B.
Anywho.
Potato.
So, getting down to the meat and potatoes of the segment here, Triple H apologizes for his actions on SmackDown. Stephanie, not so much, because then she couldn't cut people's ovaries off. But in order for Becky to be able to keep her spot at the WrestleMania pay-per-view against Ronda Rousey for the Raw Women's title, they expect an apology from Becky Lynch by the end of the show. That becomes our main event segment. We might as well skip right to it since we're doing both of these at the start of the show here. Becky comes out after Triple H and Stephanie and Triple H make their way out. Becky eventually does apologize kind of half-heartedly. Triple H and Stephanie accept the apology. They go to leave when Vince McMahon interrupts and says that he doesn't accept the apology. Becky is suspended for 60 days, which will include WrestleMania. And the woman that Ronda Rousey will face for the Raw Women's title is now Charlotte Flair. Andrew, I usually start with Tony, so I'll start with you tonight here. Let me get your thoughts on this here. Do you remember the rumors back from years ago that it was supposed to be Austin, Rock, and Foley in a triple threat at WrestleMania 15?
Vaguely.
This kind of seems like that, that they're kind of using that sort of style to build up to this year. How it was, the plan was always there for, depending on who you believe, Austin and Rock, or Austin and Foley, or Rock and Foley, or whatever. And then the other person finds a way to sneak their way into the match. It ended up not happening at WrestleMania 15, but I think it's a pretty safe bet to say that it's going to happen here for WrestleMania 34. What are your thoughts on the triple threat match, or 35, excuse me? I lost count.
This is also really close to the whole Daniel Bryan, Batista, Randy Orton thing. Like, hooray, we have the corporate choice, the people's choice, and the, I don't know, the champion, the public eye person, something like that. So it's all very color by numbers, and it's fine. Like, you can tell from the backlash of people on social media, it's perfect. It did exactly what it needed to do. Screw Becky. She didn't trust him. That was part of the reason for what she did last week. She was validated in her actions, and Charlotte's kind of the champion of the corporation, and we saw a little bit of that last week on SmackDown. So they've been making this very easy. Lots of people have seen this coming. It's not bad, and it got people riled up. It got a reaction out of people. That's what stories are supposed to do. You don't have to like it, but if it evokes something from you, it did its job. Is it simplistic in its nature? Sure, but sometimes stories that are simple are still fine. Clichés are clichés for a reason.
Tony, your thoughts on the way that we're getting to the triple threat match at WrestleMania, because this is just yet another step in the saga of Becky Lynch.
Well, while I agree with Andrew that, you know, there wasn't anything, you know, completely offensive, it is one way to get there. I think what bothers me the most is that it is one of the easiest ways to get there. And, of course, I don't need a grand story. I don't need something that is meticulously thought out or, you know, interwoven with so many other people. But for whatever reason, I just found this to be incredibly lazy. Not that they, you know, like, I agree with Andrew where they don't necessarily need some big story. But this just felt, well, first of all, they booked an entire Raw on somebody apologizing, which is a little bit, like, it's just weird to see. Like, am I really, I'm waiting 3 hours to watch someone who I've seen not apologize for a very long time. Apologize? That we're basing a show off of an apology? Again, not upset, just kind of like, this is the best you got? This is WrestleMania, man, and you're writing a show wrapped around, like, an apology. And I don't know, it just seemed really like, I felt like there's so much more weight on anything else aside from this. And secondary to that would be Vince McMahon. His presence is not nearly as commanding as it used to be. And the more that I see him, the more I feel like he really doesn't have a grasp on what his audience wants. And I'm not even talking about me, because from my perspective, Charlotte, I mean, the girl works. She puts on shows. She has great matches. She is an integral part of this story, even without Vince McMahon throwing her in there. So no matter whether people wanted the one-on-one or not, this is something that, you know, is going to happen. It's all in a matter of how they get there. And I wasn't upset, but I also wasn't gung-ho about it. This is a way to elongate the story, which is not something they need to do, because we still got quite a few days before WrestleMania. But it just seemed very, very minimal. Of course, what that means to me is that we've got more story to tell. So I'm at the very least interested in how they get from this new point to the ultimate, you know, match that's going to happen, which is the triple threat.
One of the things that I feel like is the best thing to come out of all this year is they're finally realizing the error of their ways with the Becky and Charlotte turn that they tried back at SummerSlam here. And they're finally allowing Charlotte to become more of a natural heel, which I think we can all agree, at least those of us that watch NXT on a regular basis, I think we can all agree that Charlotte is a much more natural heel than she is a babyface. And obviously the fans have taken a liking to Becky Lynch as a babyface, despite the fact that she was supposed to be a heel. The question for me is, where do you guys think this leaves Ronda Rousey's reaction at WrestleMania on April 7th? Tony?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's something that, you know, she's her character, not Ronda the person. The character, one would believe that the character wanted the one-on-one, wanted the ultimate matchup, wanted the, you know, Ronda versus the man. So ideally, her character would be upset about this. But then you have Vince doing what he did at the very end of the show, which is essentially latch himself onto the Flair train by saying, Ronda, get used to this. So nowhere before have we had Ronda and Vince at each other's throats, or even like or disliking each other. We've seen it with Steph and Triple H, obviously, and we've seen the Ronda as the face going against the authority, yet, you know, being a signee of them. So it's a very messy. I was going to say complicated, but it's not complex at all. It's actually very basic, but it's a messy story that they've booked themselves into. Does this mean we're getting like McMahon in Flair's corner? Does this mean that he's going to be a part of it? Is he going to show up next week? Because I don't think he is. So what does that ultimately do? What I assume they wanted to do was make Charlotte an incredible, like a mega heel. Now she's siding with Vince, the evil, you know, boss. I don't know. That's the thing. That's why I don't like this, because it's not that it's convoluted. It's just not well thought out at all.
I'm going to refute that on the basis of you can do your follow up question in a sec, Harry. I'm going to refute it on the basis that it did exactly the same thing that the prospect of taking Becky off of TV did. It protects Ronda. The end of the show, when you had Ronda come out, she was smiles. The crowd did not boo, because Ronda didn't position herself in the opposition of Becky. She basically said, suck it up so we can do this. People respected that. Then when they brought Charlotte out, the dynamic of the way that they shot it was Becky and Ronda were on one side and the corporation was on the other side. So you essentially protect Ronda from getting overshadowed and basically turned into the heel and booed into oblivion by siding her with Becky. So you're going to kind of use the Ronda chip against the McMahons to probably wedge Becky back into the match somehow, because it's not even a triple threat yet. It's just Charlotte versus Ronda. But if Ronda and Becky work together, I think that's enough to kind of keep Ronda safe. And then if Ronda doesn't pick up, you know, doesn't eat the pin, but she loses and say Becky wins, that's a perfect avenue for her to come back. Because if she does take the time off after WrestleMania, if they develop a respect kind of angle, that's perfect. The whole, I'll still be here waiting for you when you get back with this title because it's mine. It's simple. You know, nothing is complex about this, except the fact that they're going out of their way to position Ronda in spots to take the heat off of her. So as soon as she had the entire crowd turn against her, then suddenly it's, oh, wait, no, Becky's off. But the heat was on the McMahons. Then Becky's back. And then now the heat's on Vince and Charlotte, and Ronda no longer has the booze.
Yeah, that was kind of the perception that I got as well with the way that the crowd reacted to Ronda coming down to the ring to confront Becky, because they were about to throw down, and everybody wants to see the two of them throw down after we didn't get it at Survivor Series. With Vince McMahon coming out and appointing Charlotte into the match in Becky's stead, most people, or most of the IWC crowd that's going to make up a large portion of their WrestleMania audience, whether they want to admit it or not, knows that Ronda's probably gone for a while after WrestleMania, if not permanently, but at least for a while. And if she is gone, this is a way to kind of soften the blow to those fans and keep them from turning on Ronda the same way they turned on Goldberg and Brock back at WrestleMania 20 in 2004. Our opening contest on the show is a triple threat tag team match where the losers of the match are one of the first two teams entered into the Elimination Chamber match for the women's tag team titles. Can I just point out how fucking stupid the concept of this match is? So the losers of the fall are the ones that have to start the match and then are therefore theoretically at a disadvantage. Why the fuck would you tag in then? Nia Jax and Tamina pick up the win, not that it mattered. The loss to Bayley and Sasha. Bayley gets pinned by Nia. Yahoo. So Bayley and Sasha have to start the match for Team Raw against a team from SmackDown to be determined tomorrow night on SmackDown Live. Andrew, can you give me any justification for a stipulation that's idiotic?
To be honest, they didn't tag in for the longest time. Sasha and Bayley stayed out. Riot Squad tagged between themselves, and so did Tamina and Nia, and then they eventually tagged the other one in, which is fine. It's perfect heel tactic, because now it's like, okay, we're going to protect ourselves, you go in. And then the shenanigans aspect, to me, is just the whole Sasha thing. Like, is Sasha actually hurt? Is this just a really, really weird way to kind of turn her against Bayley, because she's just feigning injury and making sure Bayley gets screwed over and over and over again and has to do the bulk of the work? Like, I don't know where this part is going. Cause I don't think she's legitimately hurt, because 2 weeks in a row is a little too coincidental. But as for the match itself, like, the concept didn't bother me because more or less they wrestled it correctly. You know what I mean?
Tony?
Yeah, I'll have to double down on that. I mean, for the most part, they went within the guidelines of the rule. It doesn't make the stipulation any less, you know, dumb, but it's the wrestlers did kind of follow suit. I've read one place or two. Really, there's only two websites I visit, 411 Mania and Pornhub. Kidding, Greg. I'm kidding. I go to thechairshot.com, too. And I've read that Sasha might be injured, and they're trying to assure that she doesn't get hurt. So they've gone with this, you know, injury angle of sorts. I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's Sasha, and I love the girl, but, like, it just comes off a little awkward. They can heal it up and make her be that person who's pretending, but it's against her nature. And how many times are we going to see Bayley versus Sasha at ends with each other as friends and enemies? It's just, I'm not interested in it. So even that idea just comes off as like, oh God, eye roll inducing. And of course that's not Andrew's idea. Andrew's basically saying like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Because the only options I see are Sasha's milking it and pretending and Bayley's, you know, standing out, or it's legitimate and it's just kind of stupid. So neither one of those are good. If there is one silver lining out of all of this, it's that the last couple of weeks we've seen Bayley with a little bit of fire up her ass, and I think that although the match was
very boring. At the very end, when Bailey had some, a little energy in her, it was a nice little run, you know, that she had before losing. Tamina, hey, if you're listening, just want you to know, you still suck. That's all.
The sad thing is, though, she's not the worst part of that team.
Right. Well, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
tonight she might have
tonight,
been.
You know, tonight she was worse than Nia. she shot a clothesline out of the corner, like legit 2 seconds too early, missed it, which was, that was choreographed. She was supposed to miss it. But it just, man, it looked like she was falling off of a boat, like standing in a canoe and just,
See, now when you say falling off of a boat, I thought you meant the spot where she was supposed to do the Superfly Splash and she knew it was going to get countered, so she just half-assed it, like she
just,
was just falling
just
off the top
off.
Rope. Yeah, and it was so stupid. I'm like, God, you're not supposed to know what's coming. You're supposed to pretend like you're going to hit your fucking move. Like, sell, for fucking God's sakes. Like, what the fuck?
Suspension of disbelief, Tamina.
Yeah, I know. Say it in Samoan so she understands.
Speaking of Samoan, I have to ask because of how goddamn stupid it was. Samoan Slaughterhouse. Somebody really get paid for that? Because if they did, they should give their money back. Anyway,
it's not the best, but it works. Same letters. It's cute. It's got a ring to it. Yeah, I'm just making excuses, obviously, but it's awful. But it's better than some shit they came up with, like the Boston Hug Connection. Really?
When alliteration goes bad. Elias is about to perform, but instead we go backstage where Finn Balor is talking to Becky Lynch. They have a little conversation about what Balor would do if he were in Becky's situation. Balor says that he'll respect Becky no matter what decision she makes. Becky tells Finn that his abs are still awesome. I actually kind of like those two interacting with each other. I think it's kind of fun. Elias is about to perform when we go to a video package highlighting Seth Rollins. Elias is then about to perform, and this time the Lucha House.
Let me interrupt you right there, Harry. You stop. Now take. I want you to take
ahead,
a second,
Tony.
and ask yourself, did I enjoy being interrupted? Did it affect the flow of the Raw reaction brought to you by thechairshot.com? Did it make the show as a whole better by being interrupted? Harry, what do you think?
It really doesn't matter what I think.
I'll
but
tell
no,
you
it...
what you should be thinking. I'll tell you that being interrupted is annoying as shit, comes off as unprofessional, egotistical, and just pointless, especially when it comes off in such a manner that makes the show look incredibly shoddy. And I don't know who was in the production truck tonight, but there were quite a few mistakes that made this whole little piece of shit segment look like it was, you know, a class act. I mean, Let's talk about Vince McMahon coming out to a fraction of his music before it was cut off. You know, certain camera angles that just weren't in the right place at the right time. How about we cut a match up because we want to see something happening backstage, making the match in question completely irrelevant, knowing full well that one of the two people in said match will be facing the Raw Women's Champion in a few weeks. Yeah, so going back to Elias being interrupted, we can make fun of it. We can laugh that the heel was being interrupted and won't be able to finish his songs, but it just comes off as stupid and unprofessional from a production standpoint, and it doesn't help anyone, especially the three little fucking hopping beans that are in the center of the ring. And I can say that. You know why? Because I'm a bean myself.
Andrew, I got nothing. Go ahead.
I mean, I was going to say it if he didn't and just put the disclaimer out there that Tony can say it because he's also Mexican. So it's fine. There's no racism there. It's just, you know, it's normal. It's his assessment. And if he hates it, how do you think the rest of us feel? Like, Lucha House Party makes no fucking sense. Like, all they tell you when they come out, is there are three guys that like to have fun. So are they like, are they the Mexican equivalent of the Butabi brothers? You know, should we just? What was that noise?
That was an because I want to say something, but then you continued your thought. I was asking if you remembered the Oddities.
Sadly,
they are the Mexican Oddities.
They're not as bad as the Oddities. Come on.
They're worse, because at least the Oddities had a somewhat decent theme song.
And it was at least a gimmick that we understood, instead of just, they're luchadors, even though luchador is Spanish for wrestler, so everybody's technically a luchador, but not in WWE. That just means little Spanish people that wear masks. That's a luchador, because racism.
Everything about them annoys the shit out of me. Everything.
You don't like the spinning cracker thingy?
No, that is one of the most annoying sounds in the world, like worse than Jim Carrey and Dumb and Dumber. They are amazing wrestlers, all three of them. Mega credit for what they can do, but no one cares, and no one's going to care. They have zero character. They have zero personality outside of being Mexican and colorful. And don't tell me, Mr. DeMarco, that he's a former United States champion. You know who else is? Chris Benoit. You like him? Idiot.
Oh, you can't say that. Beep that. Bleep that out. We can't say Benoit.
Benoit.
No, it's you can't
beep.
Say that. Thank you.
Hold on. I'm getting word from the offices that we're not allowed to say Chris Benoit. We must stop saying Chris Benoit.
So can we say Chris Benoit?
Hold on. Let me sit down. Cross leg
in Tony.
Cut promo real quick. I don't hate you, Harry.
You be CM Punk on your own time. I'm not done here. The saddest part about this whole thing, the saddest part about this whole thing for me is that Kalisto and Elias is actually a match that I wouldn't mind seeing. The problem is that the WWE creative staff has done so little to make me give a fuck about Lucha House Party that even the most casual fans don't care to see this match, and they were basically silent for the entirety of whenever Lucha House Party was in the ring. Elias is a natural heat getter, so he's going to get a reaction from the fans one way or another. Not as much tonight as he usually does, but he still got a reaction. No one cares what Lucha House Party has to say, and it goes back to what Andrew said, which is a sad statement because they're all three pretty good wrestlers. Go ahead, Tony.
It is.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, there's nothing to gain from this. And what's unfortunate is we had a comparison to the Mexicools with regards to the three dudes that we're talking about right now and how they're this,
that's not
know,
an awful
this
comparison.
Current era's. No, it's not an awful comparison. It's actually a very astute comparison. And what's unfortunate is that no matter how much I try to remove the racial implications that are there, it's like they're highlighting it. They're specifically coming out to the ring with piñatas for no reason. I don't care. I am one of the most racist people I know, but I'm an equal opportunity racist. I'm mean to every race. So if it's funny, I'm down. This isn't funny. It's not. It just doesn't even. It doesn't. It's just there to annoy us three specifically.
Yes. Those three are purposely positioned to piss us off. That's exactly what Vince does. Vince listens to this show. He's like, what would they hate? Lucha House Party.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Maybe. I do like how your Spanish showed when you said piñata. Like, that's good.
There's no other way to say that word.
I mean, you could say it white. Trust me, I've heard people butcher that word constantly.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm too Caucasian to use that word. Bobby
yeah,
Lashley
I, I
and
work
Leo
with
Rush
Spanish people, so hey.
Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush make their way to the ring, speaking of people who should have been interrupted, and they were, as it's a video package for Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose to hype up the Women's Elimination Chamber matches. Why couldn't we have just done this during SmackDown?
Because reasons? 3 hours to fill? I don't know.
Cause filler, that's, I think, the more appropriate answer here. The next matchup is Finn Balor versus Drew McIntyre, which sees Lashley get involved for a disqualification loss for McIntyre at 3 minutes and 2 seconds, which McIntyre was surprisingly okay with. Like, if I'm McIntyre, McIntyre's whole thing is that he likes to fight people. Like, he doesn't care who you are. He wants to punch you in the face. Why would he be okay with Lashley costing him this match? Tony?
Because as great as Drew McIntyre may be, there are sometimes little inconsistencies, such as him running away from Braun a couple of weeks ago. Or was it last week? That's all. It's just that they sometimes get stuck with the tropes of what a heel should do. And that's one of the things.
I can excuse this one, though, because Drew has already dismissed Finn. But Drew has already dismissed Finn as he's too small. He's not a real threat. Yes, beneath him, literally and figuratively. So I think that's why he's okay with it. Any chance to embarrass Finn is a win in his book, because he just doesn't like him. And that fits into his motif. Like, he did the same thing with Ziggler, where he'd humiliate Ziggler when he was finally done with him. And even though he likes to fight and he's all about proving himself, like, if he thinks he's already proved himself against you, then you're just a toy, and he doesn't give a fuck, especially when you're not his Elimination Chamber opponent anyway, so why does he care about you?
Speaking of his Elimination Chamber opponent, he doesn't have one.
Sadly.
The rumors are it was supposed to be Seth Rollins before Seth pulled up lame with a back injury, but that's neither here nor there. Let's go ahead and talk about the aftermath here, where it is a 2-on-1 beatdown on Balor until Kurt Angle makes the save. Leo Rush tries to turn the odds back over towards McIntyre and Lashley. That does not end well for poor Leo. However, Baron Corbin is able to turn the tide. Strowman makes the save. And it's almost as if Teddy Long appeared out of thin air, because when we come back from the next commercial break, it's a 6-man tag match, playa, as it is Baron Corbin, Bobby Lashley, and Drew McIntyre taking on Kurt Angle, Finn Balor, and Braun Strowman. That match goes to an original finish where Lashley pins Balor. Balor gets his foot on the ropes and the referee doesn't see it. Andrew, feel free to take over.
Hey, you know, I was just pulling out the obvious inconsistencies in storytelling in general. And we had this last week, too. So it's, I don't know what the fuck WWE's grand scheme, the big picture of storytelling is, but when the Revival complained openly about feet being on ropes or kicking out or God knows what, and they're just told, no, the referee's decision is final. No, we can't reverse it. Sorry. And we do this on a show that has the Revival on it later. So that's just another funny wrinkle that's just kind of rub-ins, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But when we get the ref come out and he's like, no, his foot was on the rope. And then the guy's like, oh, really? Okay, we'll just restart the match. Why couldn't we get this like 3 weeks ago? Like, where the fuck was this? Between Braun getting disqualified for hitting somebody because he wasn't the legal person, when even if that is like the 1932 rule for tag team wrestling, nobody fucking does that anymore. So what the fuck is this? This stupid shit. Did Vince really just get bored, go into the basement and find some old books from like WWF? And he's just like, oh, look, there's a bunch of rules we haven't used. Right. Let's do this.
One of the thoughts that I had when that happened, I believe I shared it in the group chat, was something along the lines of, apparently the referees backstage only watch certain matches. The Revival's match wasn't important enough for them to be watching to overturn the decision. This one apparently was.
Which is fair, and as we all know, in case Greg does listen to this, yes, nothing matters in WWE until it does. Face and heels don't matter until they need it to. Wins and losses don't matter until it's part of the storyline. Yes, but that doesn't make it any less frustrating that WWE just get to flip a coin every fucking week and be like, what are we doing this week? All right, over the top rope is a disqualification again? All right, let's hop in the time machine and go back to 1983. Fucking A, everybody.
Fucking A. Tony, you haven't chimed in here. What were your thoughts on the restart?
First of all, I feel like they have a hat of shitty moments, and they just pull them out. And today, somebody won foot on the rope. Yeah, it wouldn't be too big of an issue if we haven't seen over the past several years them constantly complain. I think last week we saw a DQ off of, like, someone getting in the ring. And this week we see breakup after breakup of pins. And, like, it just, yeah, it's completely inconsistent. And it's only fully realized because of how much they do it. This isn't, like, a once-in-a-while thing. This is a, we want to do a six-man tag, but let's get creative. How could we do that? This isn't creative. This is devoid of creativity. This is lazy. And it sucks because the wrestlers involved all kind of look really dumb in the process, you know? So, realistically, we're over here talking about, like, restarting matches and shit. We haven't even got to that yet. But, I mean, why not restart this match? You know? Like, what happened? I don't know. It just okay, with regards to wrestling quality, this was another low blow to me because the match kind of sucked. I mean, it was slow. It was plodding. Mm-hmm. Two guys were laying outside for most of the match. The heels, I think only one person on that team the crowd really cares about. And, I mean, no one is buying into Lashley as anything other than some dude with no eyebrows. And Baron Corbin is just this vacuum that, like, sucks the energy out of every match that he's in. Now, I'm not saying he doesn't have a place. I'm saying that the place that he has right now, he doesn't deserve. There's something to do with everybody. You know, that's your job as a writer. That's your job as someone that produces television and creates a television show. Everybody has a role. And it's up to you to, I mean, I believe there was once a man that said the best way that he was capable of creating a locker room full of stars was by accentuating the positives and hiding the negatives, right? And although his company went bankrupt and you know, did not do too well, I believe from a creative standpoint, he had a really, really good methodology of creating people that mattered. I'm not saying you give Paul Heyman the book because that's not the answer here. The answer is simply utilizing that mindset. You know, well, yeah. I just think that he would create a different product than they're interested in. But the idea is you accentuate the positives, you hide the negatives, or in some cases, in WWE's case, where they have the capability to do so, you train the negatives out of someone. Now, Baron Corbin, the dude's tall, he's big, he's athletic, he can be used correctly. I just don't think this is the correct usage of him. Lashley, you know what? I'd say he's in the same boat. You know, he's tall, athletic, big. And there's been signs where you're like, perfect. You know, that's how he should be. But for the most part, he just kind of comes off as, like, there. So the match itself just came off as, like, there. No one asked for it. No one cared that it happened.
Well, kind of to touch on what you just said about Lashley right there, you can definitely tell that this is a Lashley that doesn't have the same motivation and the same fire up under his ass as the give no fucks Lashley that we saw in Impact Wrestling was. Because that Lashley was some of the best work that Lashley's put in his career. It almost seems kind of like Lashley's just back in the WWE right now to cash a check. 22 minutes and 18 seconds of television time with the restart on this match here. Balor does get the pinfall win over Lashley to bring irony, I guess, to the conclusion of the restart. As Balor has the Intercontinental title match in a handicap match, because that makes fucking sense, at Elimination Chamber this Sunday. Andrew?
What? The match? Meh. Tony's right. It was underwhelming. The matchup for Elimination Chamber? Underwhelming. But that's been Lashley since he came back, much like you just said. It's one of those rare and funny situations when we can all stop and agree Impact did it better. Like, normally that's the joke, is that Impact doesn't do characters well or doesn't do old WWE wrestlers justice, and they're just cashing a check at Impact based off of their name in WWE and a way. And I don't I don't see a light at the end of this tunnel, but I'm glad that six man is over because that was hard to fucking watch.
He's almost gone back to, like, basic bitch 2007 Black Lesnar, Bobby Lashley.
Can't disagree.
There's no real reason to care about his matches. The effort is there to an extent, but not nearly what he's capable of. And I'm sure that the booking doesn't do them any favors either. But if you want me to invest in Lashley, give me a reason to invest in him. I like Leo Rush, actually. I'm one of the only ones on this panel that does. But give me a reason to care about Bobby Lashley beyond Leo Rush, because right now it's not there. Kevin Owens vignette talking about his return probably in about a month. Tony, odds on favorite to win the Andre, you think?
No. What? I don't know. I don't care. I don't care about the Andre the Battle Chuck, whatever the fuck it's called. I could win it. And it
Andre
matter.
The Battle.
I like Andre the Battle Giant Memorial. It sounds like an anime. Like it's like Voltron spinoff. I like this.
Coming soon to Crunchyroll.
Yeah, Andre the Battle Giant. You like Ultraman. You like Power Rangers. You like Voltron. Well, check out Andre the Battle Giant Memorial.
Are you excited for the return of Kevin Owens, Tony?
Yeah, Kevin Owens is great. I don't need a promo cut on an Android to know that he's great, though. I don't know. I like surprises, and obviously we're not going to be all that surprised now that we kind of know. I mean, I'm sure we still will be, but I don't know. It wasn't like I sat up and got super pumped. I love Kevin Owens. I think he's great. I think he's going to do great when he returns, but yes, it wasn't too big of a deal for me.
I kind of feel like Kevin's an iPhone guy. That's just me. Andrew, what were your thoughts
here? Could have fooled me with that video quality.
Oh, good God. We're not even going there. But
I'm Team Android for the record.
As am I. And that's all iPhone people have is like this weird screen picture quality thing. It's like, whatever. Like, who gives a shit? If you need to FaceTime or take pictures that much and you're not a 16-year-old girl on Snapchat, get a better life. But that's not my point. My point is, who cares? Because Kevin Owens talked into a phone, said things that we kind of expected him to say, and he's just like, I'll be back in a month, and I can do it better. Yay, come back. And as for the Andre, I'm on the who cares, because when does it ever matter? Like, anybody who wins that gets talked about for like a week or two. Maybe they bring the trophy, and then you forget, because it leads to nothing. So, it's a time filler.
Well, that was kind of the idea of one of the other websites, and we've talked about this on this show before. Do you think they need to add some more gravitas to the Andre, like put up in the Mae Young Battle Royal as well? Do you think they need to add a title shot for the winner, much the same way they did for that Battle Royal at Evolution? Andrew?
Not really, because these are usually clusterfucks of mid-carders who aren't already in a main event slot on WrestleMania. So if you're not in the main event or the main card or at least a respectable enough position already, why do you really deserve a title shot? Like, sure, something should be there, but I don't know what that something is. And unless they cap it at maybe the secondary title shot, like the winner gets a U.S. or Intercontinental Championship or a tag championship match if they can find a tag team partner. But, yeah, the quality of combatants inside of that does not really give a good reason to give them a title shot. Tony, what the fuck? Are you organizing your drawer again?
Yes.
Tony's fixing his sex toys.
Or he's just beating his dick against the keyboard for a while because, you know, he's got to do that.
No, that's what Justin Watcher does when he types an article.
I know. Wow.
Tony, would you put a title shot on the line in the Andre and the Mae Young Battle Royals in order to make them mean more? Even if it is a secondary title, you could do something to set up for like the night after WrestleMania there. Give it some sort of meaning, some sort of importance, rather than just being, oh, here are a bunch of scrubs you didn't make the main card. Into the Battle Royal you go.
No title shot for the mid-carders. No title shot for anybody that wins a battle royal. I find that to be a stupid way to get to a number one contender. Yeah, you could throw somebody over a ring. Good job. The only time it matters is the Royal Rumble, and that's because of the name behind it, not because of the, you know, the match that happens. Or at least not nearly as much as the match that happens. No, you don't do that. That's not what you do. You know, we talked about, I haven't talked about this in a while, but one of the things that I used to harp on a lot with you, Harry, was the idea of them having all of these tools and assets to create stories and intrigue and them not doing it. The Money in the Bank was probably the hugest example, but this is yet another one where they have this tool, however weak it may be. They have this battle royal that has a name attached to it that means this is more important than any other battle royal. They have a trophy, they have someone win it, and then it just doesn't matter. That is nobody's fault but the writers or the creators or the creative team. This could hypothetically be something. Every single prize, if you will, could be something. But any title, any gift, any King of the Ring crown can be something if they just use it correctly. Booker T made King of the Ring into an entire gimmick. It was once a tournament that half the crowd liked, the other half didn't. A tournament that didn't matter too much to certain people. Booker T made that thing an entire gimmick, you know? When you look at things like titles that meant nothing at one point and just became this beacon of, like, success, that was them properly utilizing a tool and creating something out of it. This battle royal means jack shit to anyone. But I guarantee you that if they did it correctly, whoever wins it could possibly springboard that to something bigger. So, no, you don't get a title shot. But you can make a person like Mojo Rawley become something big instead of doing what, because he was a former winner of this battle royal, right?
Correct.
No one knows. No one cares. No one
I said
gives
correct.
Him props for it. Yeah, no.
Wrong.
No one knows, like no one knows now.
Wrong.
No one cares. When you look at Mojo Rawley, you're like, oh, shit. You know, former Andre the Battle, whatever winner.
Matt Hardy won last year's Andre, actually. B,
well, that was last
Mojo's,
year, but Mojo did win it.
Two
yeah,
years
that's
ago,
my
yes.
Point, my point.
And yeah.
I,
he
and
didn't
I,
say
I,
who
I,
won
I,
it last year. He said he won it. And that's when Grunk got involved and Jinder got butt-fucked.
Well, that was the real quick, though. I think that was kind of the point to what Tony was saying, though. When Mojo won the Andre, they actually did start to do something with him with it. And then it just fucking disappeared.
Sure, and the same
it's
thing can be said for Cesaro when Cesaro won it.
Yeah,
well,
and that young up-and-comer
big
show, you know?
Well, nothing's going to make Big Show more relevant than he is. He's just going to turn heel six more times.
I love how Tony said it just for his little brother. Like, you know, in the back of Tony's mind, he's just like, I'm going to mention Big Show and the fact that he won it just so my brother pops because he loves Show.
I'll play it back for him. Yeah. But the ultimate point here is that there's always tools in wrestling to use, and the WWE, for whatever reason, tends to use them either very, very, like, in the very beginning and then they go away or not use them at all. And it's unfortunate because for all the crap that they get for not creating stories, there's so many things that they could do where they don't have to create anything other than intrigue and interest. And the Andre the Battle, you know, whatever royal thing is a perfect example of something that they could use to create, honestly, and this is not hyperbole, to create magic, to create something like, damn, you know. And I'm not saying fight over the trophy, like you 2 weeks later somebody challenges him and like, I want the trophy. Like, even that's cheesy, but it's something I wouldn't want that. It's just that somebody wins this match and they make it a big deal. They make it the ultimate prize. They celebrate as if it is one of the biggest achievements in their career ever. And then somebody puts them down, insults them, says no, and then that person gets his ass kicked. And boom, you created a mid-card match out of two people that didn't matter. I just don't think they know how to do that anymore.
You know, for somebody who hates the fantasy book as much as Tony does, he does an awful lot of it on this show sometimes.
I don't think
we
so.
Have
I don't
to
think
get
that was fantasy
up.
Booking.
You can
I think
see
that was logic. I didn't pick names. I didn't say who was going to do it. I just simply said, here's a template. Use it.
And we actually have seen people fighting over the trophy before with Cesaro and Swagger. So it's not like it's a road that they haven't gone down before. It's just, it's an easy story to tell, too. It's just you have to take advantage of the story that's presented to you in order to be able to tell it. All right,
correct.
Tony, let's
not
get you pissed
on
off
the story
once again.
Halfway through.
Let's piss off Tony again. So you know how he talked about the fact that he hates when matches cut backstage during the course of the match? Well, it happened
yeah,
to
it's that time again.
Ruby Riott. Go ahead, Tony. The floor is yours.
I don't like Ruby Riott. I'm not that big a fan of Nikki Cross. I know that's going to upset some people, but that's simply how I feel. I feel like she is a great character, although very, very one note. Other than that, a little bit of sloppiness in the ring, kind of chaotic, although that's her gimmick, so I can forgive that. None of it makes me feel that they're deserving of a splicing of their match to go backstage to hear somebody say, I'm thinking about something. You'll see me think about it several times later. This is Becky Lynch. She is the man. She is the best thing happening in wrestling right now. And I still don't want a match to be cut in half to go backstage to see her contemplate apologizing to someone. It's just, I don't know. It's just, again, I blame this. And although it's not, they did it on purpose, I blame this to production. I don't know if you guys noticed the rushed way things were moving today. How Dean Ambrose came out to the ring a little bit sooner than he should have just to say, you know, go ahead, Seth. How in the very beginning, Sasha Banks' music hit before, you know, Steph and Triple H could fully leave. There's just a lot of sloppiness. And this, again, that you can't say that this is a fault of production because they did it on purpose. This was what they meant to do. But what I'm saying is there's a better way to do this. This was unfair, realistically. And I think from a storyline perspective, what you're doing is you're going to make Ruby Riott beat Nikki Cross, someone who just got to Raw, someone who does not have a foundation yet. You're going to make her beat her just so that she looks strong enough for it to be even slightly believable that she's going to beat Ronda Rousey. Everybody knows she's not. But you want that small glimmer of hope. And that's why they do this all the time with a new challenger. Every single time they make them win up until that particular match. So Ruby Riott's going to get the win. She's going to get that big W so that she looks stronger going into the match against Ronda. And then you undercut that by saying, hey, this match that you're watching right now does not matter. In fact, it doesn't matter so much that we're going to go to the person who really matters because she's the one that's going to face Ronda Rousey. She's the one that's important. So don't worry about Elimination Chamber. You already know what's going to happen. You don't need to watch it. You don't need to buy it. In fact, you don't even need to see Ruby Riott. So don't. Just skip that whole thing. And then later on in the show, you find out Becky Lynch isn't going to be in the main event at all. So it's just, why'd you do this? Why did you go this route? What made you think that this was a good idea?
Andrew?
See, a pound and a half of peyote makes you see some weird shit. So when you go on a vision quest and the floating wolf spirit tells you to just cock-tease people for the entire show and to undercut your mid-card talent because they don't matter and everybody knows it doesn't matter because it's Ronda Rousey, who cares? You listen to the wolf spirit. Haven't you ever done a pound and a half of peyote?
I stick to whiskey.
All right, have you ever gotten that drunk that you see the wolf spirit?
I got so drunk that I have become the wolf spirit.
So then you know what I'm talking about. There we go. That's
Geelong,
the magical answer to everything.
The show.
I mean, hey, what you going to do? This was an awful segment. We have to do something to at least make it amusing to ourselves.
Seth Rollins up next to talk about the upcoming WrestleMania match against Brock Lesnar. He quickly mentioned the night that they showed the highlights of a little bit earlier on in the show with the gauntlet match that Rollins wrestled for over an hour in. Rollins then talks about the fact that he won the Royal Rumble and his reward the next night was 6 F5s from Brock Lesnar. There's good news and bad news. The bad news is he was F5 six times by Brock Lesnar and he definitely feels it. The good news is that it's not going to matter because he's still going to go to WrestleMania and take out Brock Lesnar to become the Universal Champion. Seth is interrupted by Paul Heyman, Paul Heyman talks about the fact that if you're laying out a challenge that Brock Lesnar is going to have to kill you in order to defeat you, that is basically what we call a suicide mission. Surprised to hear that exact word used on the show tonight. There is a little bit of back and forth between Rollins and Lesnar, or between Rollins and Heyman, excuse me, about Lesnar. And Rollins says what pretty much everybody has said about Brock not being there on the show, to the point that it's become old hat, almost incredibly cliche. But he does state that regardless of anything, that he will be leaving WrestleMania as the WWE Universal Champion. And Mr. Heyman, that is not a prediction. That is a spoiler spinning around Heyman's comments towards Rollins about Lesnar. Andrew, what were your thoughts on the interactions that we got between Seth Rollins and Paul Heyman tonight?
What? Was anything said, really? No? I'm going to beat you. You're going to beat me. My client. Boom. Maybe a bitch. Maybe a suplex city. No, you're wrong. Prediction. Reality. Yay.
Stuff. It's happening. Yeah, Tony.
I mean, that was the equivalent of what the fuck was said. Like, it was the most worthless, useless waste of 8 minutes or however fucking long it was. Like, yeah. I've taken more eventful shits.
Tony?
You know, every time Seth Rollins cuts a promo, it makes me understand fully how easy it is to recreate history in the WWE umbrella. Not saying that he was wrong in anything that he says, but it means that legit any wrestler can go out there and pinpoint highlights of their last year and make it viable enough to be a good enough foundation to be in the main event or one of the main events of WrestleMania. And that's not an insult. That's just me pointing out how easy it is to do that with anybody and how much they do not do that. Seth Rollins has not had a marquee year. He's just kind of been there. I don't know how many times on how many different occasions Andrew has said, oh yeah, it was a Seth Rollins match, you know, in that same tone. Like, because that's what he has seen over the past year. That's what I've seen over the past year. It's not that he's not impressive. He's Seth Rollins. He's good, you know, but realistically, Triple H coming down and telling him they're like, man up and blah, blah, blah. It's like they're trying to usher in Seth Rollins into that role that he has not been in for a very long time, if ever. So they're trying to, like, push him into that role. And I just, you know, I'm not buying it. I support it because I want anyone besides Brock Lesnar. I mean, there's a lot of little weird things here. You know, he's going to sell himself his soul. He's going to sell his soul to the devil. I mean, is Vince McMahon going to come down and help him out? I don't. there's no shots. Yeah, well, we'll see. So yeah, and then Heyman, man, he's so eloquent and it's so beautiful, and I love what he says. But I mean, he is proof that you could say the same thing 50 different ways, because that's all he's ever done. He's saying the same stuff. We've seen this story before. I mean, basically, Seth, you are a martyr. You're a martyr of the month. Okay, that's all you are, right? He's no different than anybody else that has lined up to face Brock Lesnar. The match probably won't be that different. It's going to be him getting his ass kicked for a majority of it and then pulling it out at the end, most likely, to win the title. I don't know. I just, again, this is devoid of creativity. And they've got time, okay? So this isn't me putting them down forever. They've got time to make this interesting. They've got time to make this compelling. Heyman saying Brock Lesnar isn't here tonight, I don't think people give a shit. It's time. It's time to get him out of the title picture and create something worth watching. Okay, if WWE is like soap operas, then there is something for everyone on the show. This is 3 hours, and I am struggling to find something for me.
What? We went to me first. I was even less interested and more bored, and everything Tony said just with much less desire to give a shit or to even pretend to give a shit. Yeah, Seth Rollins doesn't intrigue me. Heyman says the same thing. Yes, Rollins will probably win. It'll be marginally better to have the belt on TV instead of on Brock Lesnar, wherever he may be at the time. But, I don't know. I don't care.
Canada.
Make me care.
The answer to that question is probably Canada. As
possibly.
Tony pointed out, as Tony pointed out a little bit earlier, Ambrose comes out and tells Rollins to slay the beast. I think this is some sort of mild attempt in order to make good on the Shield before Ambrose does take his hiatus, in case Ambrose does decide to come back down the road and they decide to go back to that well once again for the Shield reunion. That being said, Ambrose is in action next as he takes on EC3 in a match that lasts 4 minutes, and Dean Ambrose pins EC3 because fuck all you new people, none of you fucking matter anyway. Tony, same thoughts here to the Nikki Cross situation with Nikki losing on television for EC3?
Well, yeah, similar thoughts, not the same. EC3 has potential, and it's weird to say that about somebody who's been wrestling for a long time. The thing against Dean Ambrose is a name, no matter how damaged he may be over the past couple of months. This isn't over. I don't think that Dean getting his win back spells the end of this little quasi-feud, so I won't fully regale it to a failure. Whereas Nikki Cross, they fed her to Ruby because they wanted to keep Ruby strong, yet, ironically enough, made her weak by cutting the match in half with a video, with a backstage segment. So EC3 is a little bit different, I think. And I also see a very, very high upward trend for him, barring any idiocy.
What about the iconic promo that happened before we actually got the match between Ambrose and EC3? Do you think that does any disservice to the two gentlemen in the ring by having the start of their match delayed for a promo from two women via video recording?
My TV was on mute when they showed up, so I don't really know what they said. No, that was a little bit different than, again, in the middle of a match. So it was just weird pacing tonight.
Fair enough. Andrew, your thoughts on EC3 going down in 4 minutes to Dean Ambrose tonight?
Okay. 50-50 booking. Whatever. We'll see where this goes. I mean, I don't know if I've said it or if it's been overly clear, but I don't really give two shits about EC3. Like, when he was in Impact, he was entertaining. Don't get me wrong. Ethan Carter III, I got it. Rich boy, heel, Dixie's nephew. I get it. But let's think about it this way. He was the top guy during the worst period of Impact. So what does that really say? None of his matches really ever lit the world on fire. And now he's doing the same thing where he's okay to look at for some people. Some people like that. And he can talk to a degree when he's not tripping over himself because he was infamous for flubbing lines even in NXT, and now we're getting mediocre matches. Granted, yes, I think they're set up that way on purpose, and there might be a better match on a pre-show on Elimination Chamber building to something. Who knows? But, yeah, EC3 ain't all he's cracked up to be. I love how people blow him like he's the fucking next biggest thing when he's, like, 34, and as I've already said, he was the top guy during the worst time in Impact, and now he didn't win shit in NXT, and now he came up to WWE, and he hasn't even talked, really, aside from in the middle of the ring, which makes absolutely no sense, because if he's not talking in backstage segments, you'd think he'd shut the fuck up in the ring, too. But, you know, there's no consistency there. So, hey! Hooray.
One of the better Becky Lynch-involved segments tonight on Raw was the one with Alexa Bliss backstage. Those two have shown tremendous chemistry together from when they worked together over the SmackDown Women's title, and it continued here as Alexa played the snide little bitch trying to convince Ronda or Becky not to apologize, therefore she would be able to slide into Becky's title match opportunity. We would later find out they didn't have Alexa in mind anyway. That's neither here nor there. Becky calls her out on her shit. Alexa doesn't backtrack, though, and just says that if she apologizes, then she'll just be the little Irish girl who sold out, to which Becky responds, "If I apologize, the only thing I'm selling out will be WrestleMania," which I thought was a nice little line. Tony, we generally praise Alexa on this show. What did you think of the Alexa and Becky segment backstage here?
Yeah, it was cool. It was one of the better ones. I could have done without the Ronda one, but I get why it happened. Just the placement was wrong. But this Alexa one was pretty cool. I like Alexa initially doing her little bit and then coming back with the realness. What I wasn't truly fond of was Becky's dialogue. It seemed too obvious. Like, oh, you're trying to get my spot. Well, if you really consider that idea, what in what world would Alexa get her spot? So it becomes exposition for the sake of exposition. And as any writing 101 class would tell you, you don't want to do that. You don't have your character explain the motivations of the other character simply so the audience is aware of something that we should already hypothetically be aware of. And that was on full display right here, like full display. And realistically, the only reason why that last line worked was because Becky Lynch said it. Anybody else would have said it, you'd realize how cheesy that was. I'm not knocking it. I'm not knocking you. I liked it too. I'm saying that is the importance of character versus dialogue. In 1 minute, you have Becky Lynch explaining, over-explaining what Alexa Bliss is currently doing. And in the next one, you have her take a shitty line and make it awesome. So those are the two parallels that I saw tonight in a very, very small window that kind of highlighted so many issues with the writing team. God, I hate them.
Andrew, your thoughts on the Alexa Becky segment as well?
Yeah, exactly what's been said. It was all right. Alexa played her part. Becky played her part. The exposition I don't find to be as bothersome because I think it was the point was that everybody knew Alexa was just trying to be a manipulative bitch. And the fact that Becky called her out on it, I think there was a pop because everybody's just like, yeah, that's right. You don't take shit. You saw through her bullshit. Yay. Because that's kind of been the Alexa shtick for like the last year or so where she tries to play goody-goody and then she turns it on you and she goes super bitch. So it works. That's an aspect of the character.
Super bitch.
Duper bitch. Yeah. But yeah, so she does that and then Becky called it out. And yeah, I didn't mind the sellout line. I didn't hate it. But, you know, I also kind of liked it the first time I heard it back in, like, 1993 when Metallica said it, when people said they sold out, and then they say something back on the effect of, yeah, we only sell out concerts or we just sell out venues. Yes. So it's an overused line. It was decent enough because Becky's snarky and always kind of has a one-liner in her pocket. So good for her. But, it didn't really do anything special for me.
In-ring main event is the Revival versus Rude and Gable for the Raw Tag Team titles. And after 19 minutes and 50 seconds of television time, that is not a typo. That is actually how long it lasted. I'm reading I have the review pulled up here with the match times on it. The Revival are the Raw Tag Team champions. Good for them. Tony, will it mean anything?
I mean, they won, so I guess. I don't know. We're probably going to get a multi-team match at Mania. I'm happy for them, but, man, so much has been done to get to this point, and it just comes off as really deflated. I will give them this, though. The match was amazing, okay? Specifically, the final third of it. I believe once they came back from commercial the final time, everything was awesome. It was just, man, it was just good shit. Gable really showed up. Rude played his part, but the Revival were just, they do the little things that matter, you know, where even if they were to make slight mistakes, which they did tonight, you know, a little bit of a misstep here or kind of a flailing here, but even when they make mistakes, they make it a part of their match because it's human, you know, it's human to make small errors. It's how you fix it or how you go about it afterwards that matters. And I don't know, man, everything that I saw at the end there was just awesome. It's a shame that this match wasn't like done several months ago. It's a shame that they had to get to a point where they're not that big of a deal right now, where we don't really know where they land in terms of face or heel or personality, if you don't want to use the terms face or heel. We don't really know where they stand. Are they willing to take on all challengers? Because that's what it sounded like at the very end with the interview. Are they going to gloat and say that they're better than everybody here? Does anybody care who challenges them? Who can possibly challenge them? Are we going to have Heavy Machinery get their third number one contenders match?
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't fully care, but I'm willing to watch next week because I have to.
Because of the reviewing process over at 411mania.com/wrestling. Andrew, is it too late for this win for the revival to become, for it to mean anything? Is it too late for this win to happen for it to be relevant?
No, it's never too late. It's just always in the unknown of how they build from this. Yes, the revival are a damaged product. Yes, that stupid amalgamation team they decided to throw together during the Rumble pre-show didn't help anybody. And them winning the elimination match or whatever the hell that was last week to get to here, like, yeah, it was okay, but nobody really cared. And that's the same point we're at, and that's basically what Tony was saying. Like, I'm interested to see where they're going to go because we all know the Revival are a good team. They have tag team wrestling down to a science. You know, watching them in the ring is wonderful because it feels like the old school wrestling, tag team wrestling that we all grew up on, you know. Brain Busters, Anderson Brothers, you know, anything, Legion of Doom, whoever you want to throw in there. Like, they're just good. They're just good old school style wrestling, and it's nice to watch. And Gable, the way Gable speeds up the match was really nice too, because it's perfect in his personality that he's like the little battery where he'll just start, you know, wrapping around for some chain wrestling real fast, or he'll pull out the Chaos Theory German Suplex, which I love the Chaos Theory German Suplex. And, you know, he'll go to the well one too many times, maybe with a moonsault, but it was just really nice. And the finish was perfect. Like, it was obvious. Like, I kind of saw them setting it up, but it was beautiful. They did it well. I'm glad the Revival won. I hope it goes somewhere. I do. Do I have much faith? No. But I hope it does.
Not only did he hit Chaos Theory, he also hit Kreutz Raft as well. Just an admittedly minorly bastardized version of it, because Dawson landed on his feet before the German suplex out of the electric chair, but it was still Kreutz Raft, Kenny Omega's old finish.
It was the attempt, yeah.
We already discussed our closing segment, thus bringing us to the end of tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. Let's go into our final reaction for the show, and then after that, we will do our predictions for the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. Favorite match or moment, Tony?
I'm going to give it to the Revival. I think that they did really well.
Andrew?
Same. That whole match was awesome.
Yeah, it's a clean sweep here. That was definitely the best part of Raw. And the only thing that I thought hurt the match is the fact that it wasn't on a little bit earlier in the show so that the fans would have been more invested in it. I think if you would have put this match up as the first match and then done the women's triple threat as the main event on the show, it would have probably worked out better for both matches. Greg Watchery, Tony.
There was a lot, but I'm going to go with interjecting a backstage promo between Ruby Riott and Nikki Cross. And like I said, I the preface of this is that I don't fully enjoy Nikki Cross yet like everyone else does, and I'm not really a big Ruby Riott fan, and this match didn't hold a lot of importance, and yet I still found it completely unnecessary to basically shun it like it didn't matter at all. So I could see Ronda Rousey grab Becky Lynch's arm and tell her how important their match is.
Andrew.
Yeah, I'm going to go for the just schizophrenic way that they just decide to enforce rules or enforce replay. Like, the whole foot on the rope thing, just it builds off of last week's stupid fucking DQ because you weren't the legal man thing. Like, That's just so stupid. It's like just it insults our intelligence because we've all seen this happen multiple times, even recently, and it doesn't matter. But now, suddenly it matters, and it's like, ugh, that's stupid.
I'm going to go with the EC3 Dean Ambrose match and the fact that they pinned a loss on EC3 this early into his attempted run on the Raw side. The Raw side is hurting for baby faces, and while I don't think that EC3 is going to stay a face, he's somebody that could be a usable hand on the babyface side of things for Raw. Having him go 50-50 with Ambrose when it is known that Ambrose is on his way out of the company does him no favors and really doesn't do Ambrose any favors either. Scale of 1 to 10, Tony.
It was a pretty lackluster show. Relatively boring. Somewhat simplistic storytelling. You would not think that we're in WrestleMania season, I guess you could say. And I think that they have a lot of ideas already implanted, so they are struggling with getting there without giving away too much in the front end. You know, you still have to sell Elimination Chamber. You still have to sell Fastlane. So this show kind of suffered from that. An easy, like, 4 out of 10, for sure.
Hit it with the Bret Hart special. I actually completely agree with that, too. I think that this is the problem of having this many pay-per-views. With the old school way of doing things back in the days where it was 5 or 6 pay-per-views a year, you were able to slowly tell these stories and get from Chapter A to Chapter B to Chapter C over an extended period of time without having to worry about, what are we going to do for this in your house? What are we going to do for Bad Blood? What are we going to do for Vengeance? What are we going to do for No Mercy? I think that in the WWE Network age, the oversaturation of pay-per-views isn't a necessity anymore, and it does nothing but a disservice to the creative team because they have to run through a various amount of storylines in such a short amount of time. Andrew, scale of 1 to 10.
Wow, this is a surprise because I'm going to come in a bit higher than both of you, and I'm going to go 5.5 because the simple way of telling stories didn't bother me. Now, the cuts in the matches, that bothered me, but not nearly as much as it bothered Tony. The last match really saved things. And, you know, the promo main event, where that's part of the simple storytelling, but it didn't bother me. In fact, it kind of helped things along and helped to, I guess, strengthen where I thought things were going in my stance from last week, so I was okay with that. We at least saw some movement on character development and some of the storylines. Like, there was movement. Granted, it was simple. Granted, we could have seen it be done better, differently, you know, but as uneventful as it may have been and as much as some things pissed me off, it still wasn't that awful from, I guess, a casual perspective, so I can't really rag on it by nitpicking too much, because it was fine. I still think the interruptions on Elias were stupid, though. But yeah, 5.5.
I'm actually slightly higher than you are, Andrew. I gave it a 6. And the reason I'm giving it a 6 is because I thought that by and large it was a fairly average Raw, rather pedestrian. But that main event match that we had, the Raw Tag Team title match between The Revival and Gable and Rude, gave it the extra boost that it needed to push it to above average.
Yeah, that wasn't a whole point in my book, though. I gave it a 0.5 point, though.
Fair enough. Who's your MVP tonight, Tony?
The Revival.
Same.
I'm going to give it to a member of the opposite team. I'm actually going to give it to the Energizer Bunny, Chad Gable.
Fair point.
They were ever serious about giving this guy a singles run, I think he could be a star, because he has the charisma, he has the in-ring abilities, he has the microphone skills, and most importantly to me, he has the it factor. If he were the size of a guy like Drew McIntyre, he would be a multiple-time WWE champion already. Simply put, Chad Gable has it. All right, let's do our predictions for the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. Right now we have 7 matches officially announced. If anything else gets added between now and Chamber, I will message you guys and try to get your predictions for them. If anything does get added, I know to write down AJ Lee for Tony's prediction. That is usually the way these prediction specials go. We'll start with the easy one here, Baron Corbin, Braun Strowman. Tony?
Ron.
Andrew.
No one wins in that match. That's just, ugh. But yeah, I guess if I have to pick one, it's Braun, but that's, you're up, Harry Coco.
Braun in 2 minutes with a power slam. Maybe two power slams because the fans chant one more time. And if that happens, then it goes 3 minutes. Raw women's titles on the line when Ronda Rousey defends against Ruby Riott. Tony?
Ronda.
Andrew.
Ruby's totally going to win. No, it's Ronda. Stop it. Like, this is such a waste of time. Especially with the Charlotte ad after today. Like, why? What the fuck? She shouldn't defend the title in Tulmania if you're just going to do dumb shit like this.
Pretty much my thoughts verbatim. The Charlotte thing made it completely official. If anything, you'd have been better off putting Ruby against Asuka for the SmackDown Women's title because she might actually have a snowball's chance in hell of winning that match. Seriously, where the fuck has Asuka been the last 3 weeks?
Napping.
Cruiserweight title was on. And adding days to her reign.
And she's also adding days to whatever game she's playing. Leave Asuka alone. Like, it's not her fault they're not booking her well.
I understand she's going to enter the Andre the Giant. I fucked that up. How did it go, Tony?
Andre the Battle Giant, whatever.
Andre the
Battle
Giant.
Yeah, she is the Empress of Tomorrow. That's who Andre the Battle Giant fights for, is the Empress of Tomorrow, because he has to protect tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. She's his queen, or his empress,
yes.
I guess.
WWE is the best anime ever. What can I say?
Buddy Murphy defends the Cruiserweight title against Akira Tozawa, Tony.
Oh, that's cool.
It's so nonchalant. Like, oh, that's actually happening? Okay, then. Good to know. I still need a prediction, nonchalantness aside.
Buddy.
Andrew?
Yeah, I'm going to go with my buddy.
I'm taking Murphy as well. I think when Murphy drops the title, it'll probably be at Mania. And since Mustafa's now busy on 205, it'll probably be back to Cedric. IC title sees Finn Balor challenge Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush in a handicap match. Tony, pick me a winner, and for a bonus point, who gets the fall?
Hold on. He's facing both.
If the
yes,
team
it's
of
the handicap
Lashley,
match.
If
oh my
the
God.
Team of Lashley and Leo wins, who scores the fall for an extra point?
Leo Rush pins Finn Balor.
Andrew.
Yeah, I was going to go with that one, too, that Bobby would make it just the rub-ins to get pinned by the little guy. But I don't know. But Bobby and Leo are winning. I don't care who pins them. I'm going to just say Leo. But, yeah, this is stupid. So stupid.
Since Balor pinned Lashley tonight on Raw with the restart, Lashley pins Balor to retain the title on Sunday. SmackDown tag team titles are on the line when The Miz and Shane McMahon defend against the Usos, Tony.
Miz and Shane are going to WrestleMania with the titles. Should hopefully be a good match, though. The Usos are great.
See, now I feel like it's the inevitable, you know, somebody turns on somebody after they drop the titles kind of angle with Miz and Shane, because I don't think they can keep Shane, and I don't think they can keep Miz goofy for this long because they need somebody else aside from Brian to be like a legitimate main event player. So, yeah, I'm going to say Usos win, and this causes the maybe not so slow unravel of McMiz or the A-list money team, besties, whatever fuck they're called. Just, yeah. So I'm going Usos.
I'm also picking the Usos, and Miz lays out Shane on the SmackDown after Elimination Chamber to cement them on their road to WrestleMania. The women's tag team titles are brought back for the first time since 1991 inside of the Elimination Chamber. Tony?
Sasha and Bayley are going to win titles that mean nothing.
I would think Tony would be excited for his Bay winning a title. Did I use that correctly?
I think close enough. I don't know. I don't talk like that.
I miss AJ.
To steal an old Jerry Lawler line, I am definitely more hip replacement than hip. Andrew?
Sasha's going to be on the IR, so the Jumping Bomb Angels are going to come back and replace them, and they're going to win the titles again, just to bring it all the way around. Yeah, Jumping Bomb Angels.
All the way.
Norio Tatano and Itsuki Yamazaki.
Did you watch Survivors?
No, I knew that, actually.
Good for you.
I just recently watched Survivor Series 1987. The only reason.
Sounds like
you know, when I give you credit, you don't have to undercut yourself. You know that, right?
I'm honest almost to a fault.
Yeah,
are you going to give me an actual prediction, Andrew?
Still using Jumping Bomb Angels as my ace in the hole, but fine, since you want one of the ones that are actually on the card. You know, I'll go Iconics, because I think Sasha Bailey's too obvious, and if there's some kind of heel turn lurking or a possible injury, then there's no reason for them to win this. So I like Iconics.
I think Sasha and Bayley get their moment for the titles at WrestleMania. I think Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan actually win the titles at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. I think you put the titles on the heel team to start, so along your line of thinking with the Iconics, thus giving Sasha and Bayley something to chase going towards WrestleMania. So I'm going to go with Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan. The SmackDown heavyweight title, the WWE Championship, because it's not as important as the Universal Championship, don't you know, even though it's the one being defended, is on the line in the Elimination Chamber as well, as Daniel Bryan defends against AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, Randy Orton, Samoa Joe, and maybe Mustafa Ali, depending on what you do or don't believe of the rumor mill. Tony?
Daniel Bryan.
If Ali doesn't participate, who do you think replaces him?
Man, I don't know.
That doesn't help. Thanks. Not an actual question, just curiosity. Andrew?
All right, so if Mustafa doesn't compete, Shinsuke replaces him. And out of who wins, we're just under the assumption that it is going to be Ali. I don't feel like Brian needs to. He did just make it out of hemp. So that'd be kind of stupid to drop it after like 2 weeks of unveiling the new thing. So yeah, I'll go with Brian.
I'm taking Brian as well, mostly because I don't think he has a ready set storyline in for WrestleMania yet, so they're going to have to kind of come up with something for him between now and the WrestleMania pay-per-view. I'm curious as to where they're going to go with him and where they're going to go with the title, and there's another rumor going around that he might be getting another bodyguard to help him keep the title in his possession as well.
Hey.
Luke,
well,
I wasn't going to spoil
anything, but it's about correct for what I heard as well. The talk is that Luke Harper
Luke
will
Hemper.
Be returning to the WWE. Luke Hemper? That's what we're going with now?
Luke Hemper, yeah, that's what I said.
We're going to have to trademark that before the WWE tries. Speaking of trademark news, did you guys see that Then Now Forever shit that CBS pulled and the WWE got all pissed off about it and decided to trademark the catchphrase?
Well, it's their own fault for not doing it to begin with, so fuck them.
I mean, you would think that if you're using it in your opening signature, you would have it trademarked, right?
Maybe it's too basic to trademark.
Possible.
That's hot.
But they actually... God damn it, Andrew.
Iconic.
I knew you guys would get the reference. That was the best part.
Fucking Paris Hilton does. How dare you? She's too busy being on The Masked Singer, I think, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know which one. Paris Hilton's irrelevant to you?
She was never relevant to me.
Yeah,
she's too
tall. Pornhub disagrees with you, Tony.
No. She's in the weight class because she weighs like a buck and change, but she's too tall. Tony likes more compact.
Yeah.
This is true.
I don't like her face.
I feel like if there's somebody in the WWE currently that Tony would be obsessed with, it would be Zelina.
You or Casey Catanzaro.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. We already had the Casey Catanzaro discussion last week here on the show.
God, that girl. Holy shit. You could wrap around my ring post. Huh.
Funny story. He actually tweeted out about the fact that nobody told him who Casey Catanzaro was, and Casey liked the tweet. So now the obsession has begun.
I'm one step closer.
Yeah, you have to get through Ricochet, though, so good luck with that.
One step closer to chloroform, I believe.
Hey, she's small.
Ricochet.
It's not going to take that much.
I'll just give her the wink and the gun. That's all you ever need.
Is that a euphemism?
The gun is... Before this disintegrates any further, for the third man, Andrew Belaz and Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst, thanking you for listening to this episode of The Raw Reaction, a presentation of the Chairshot Radio Network online at thechairshot.com. In addition, you can find Tony at 411mania.com/wrestling, where he does the weekly Raw report. Andrew has your top five matches of the week at thechairshot.com. I have your progress wrestling reviews at thechairshot.com. And soon I will have reviews for both, Impact Wrestling's homecoming pay-per-view. And I'll go ahead and let everybody know, Andrew and I kind of revealed this a little bit last week, but I'll go into more detail here. I will be covering the AEW pay-per-views in the similar What I Watched format for thechairshot.com as well. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you guys next week with the wrap-up for the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view as we start the road to Fastlane. Tony, hit your line.
Deuces, bitches.
Come to where it goes. We share this need.
Andrew, hi, how are you?
Not too bad. How about you, Harry?
A little bit of a postscript to this episode of The Reaction. The date of the show is February 11th, and if there's one thing that you may or may not know about thechairshot.com, it's that a lot of us have fucking February birthdays.
Oh, this is true.
And this is actually the last episode before a couple of those birthdays, so we might as well go ahead and send out some well wishes. One of which because he can fire me, even though I'm shocked he hasn't done it yet. Our great evil overlord, Greg DeMarco's birthday, is actually the following Saturday, the 16th. I believe you mentioned that one of the other higher-ups in the chair shot has a birthday this week as well.
Chris Platt is actually today, since it's after midnight, so it's the 12th. So today is Chris Platt's birthday.
And then Thursday, the 14th, not only is it Valentine's Day, and it's also my 34th birthday. So to both Chris and Greg, happy birthday. Welcome to the February Club. Shout out to Rick Bailon as well, the former co-host of the Raw Reaction. His birthday is February 15th. Wanted to make sure I sent out well wishes for happy birthdays to everybody. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you guys next week with our wrap-up of the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view and the start of the road to Fastlane. Anything to add, Andrew?
No, there's still like 2 weeks before my birthday, so I'm good.
Okay. We'll talk to you guys next week here on the Raw Reaction, a presentation of the Chairshot Radio Network. You have been listening to The Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Join us again next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. as Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and Andrew Balazs present The Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com.